Hey, this is Kaylee Moore.
And this is Paul Jarvis.
Welcome to the Creative Class Podcast.
A podcast for freelancers.
Woohoo!
Yay! This season is sponsored by our friends at Flywheel, who've hosted our Creative Class website for years.
They're who we trust for reliable service and top-notch customer support.
They also take care of everything, from security to nightly backups to free demo sites.
Check out getflywheel.com/friends/cc and use the code CCPODCAST to get 50% off your first month of any plan.
Hooray.
Sustainability is something that we talk about a lot within Creative Class and just kind of under the umbrella of freelancing, because that's a big concern for everybody is how do I make this sustainable for a long-term career? It seems like, oh, sure, I can make this work for a couple of months, but is this realistic for me on, you know, a year-to-year basis? And so in this episode, we're going to get into the topic of retainers. It's something that we get a lot of questions about within our Slack channel. There's been a lot of discussion around it, and it's kind of one of those gray areas. It's one of those it depends topics, but we're going to share some basic insights on it and really just dive into this topic and talk about some of the pros, the cons, what you need to think about when it comes to retainers, and everything in between. Paul, what's your thoughts on retainers? I'll let you kick this off.
I've done some retainers, but the majority of my work when I was freelancing was not retainers. And I talked about this in another episode, the time that I got burned for a ton of money. It was a retainer client. So I think that that soured retainers for me in a lot of ways. And I did a few after that, but they were never very substantial. And I guess before we get into it, I'm kind of curious about your experience with retainers on the work that you've done.
Yeah. So I feel like initially my transition into freelancing was because of retainers. So I had two retainer clients. One of them I still work with today, and they were local people. And it was social media management that I was doing for them, which is not even a service. I don't really offer that. I do writing now. So back then I had landed those gigs just by talking to people locally and, you know, seeing what they needed help with. And a couple of organizations locally needed help with managing social media. And so I just kind of acted as a social media manager on a retainer basis. And there was a scope of work that laid out the tasks I was supposed to do. We would have a meeting once a month. And so it was a little bit open-ended, but it was something for me that made me feel very safe and secure about leaving my full-time job and transitioning into freelance. Because I knew that I was going to make X amount, you know, based off those retainers every single month, at least for the next year. And so for me, it was a very much a peace of mind thing. And I still love the fact that I work with that one client today, because I just like having that number of, I know I'm going to have this amount every month. So even though it's outside the service area for what I'm doing today, it's a client relationship that I value. And it's also like a sustainability long-term business move, I guess.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's value in them. And I think there's just a lot to talk about, though, when it comes to the nuts and bolts of them. And so I think we'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah. And I think probably a good place to start, at least in my mind, is that regardless of how you structure a retainer as a freelancer, I think the first and foremost thing is that you have to remember that retainer doesn't mean you're an employee. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this in the course. We've talked about this a lot before as well in the Slack channel for students and possibly even on the show, is that even if you're on a retainer, you're not an employee of that company. Like, retainers are not full-time employment. They're different. And I think that we still have to approach the way that we freelance from the perspective of a freelancer, even if it's a retainer where we're not letting the client dictate when we work, which I think is important. And we're not letting the client necessarily always dictate how we work. Like, I think sometimes it may make sense to do things on a retainer, like be part of a Slack group for that client, or to have like regularly scheduled phone calls, even though phone calls can die. But there might need to be like a weekly check-in or a bi-weekly check-in or something like that. But I think fundamentally, we always do need to remember that even if we're doing retainer work, that we're still freelancers. And then I guess the other point to that, and it may just be me here, but I would worry if any one client as a freelancer was making me the bulk of my income, because again, that would feel like I'm an employee of that one client as opposed to having lots of clients and lots of projects. So even when I was freelancing, I was always kind of cognizant of not wanting to take on any project that was so big that it would make up the bulk of my revenue for a significant amount of time. Because then I would feel like, oh no, if this client goes away, if this retainer dies, like then I feel like I'd be back at square one. So I think those are kind of like the big picture mindset things that I like to think about when I'm thinking about retainers.
Those are both such good points. And I feel like, especially the idea of you're not an employee, when you're in a retainer, it's really sticky. It can be a really slippery slope, even with the scope of work, even with a contract, because, you know, it's kind of that situation where the client says something like, oh, we just need one more little thing. And, you know, it's never a little thing. It always ends up taking longer than you expect, or it always ends up snowballing a little bit to become a bigger project or bigger ask. And so, again, this is where the boundaries come in handy. But I think you also have to have the confidence and the willingness to push back a little bit, I guess, in a client relationship, to where you're not just getting walked all over. Because like you said, if they are making up a big chunk of your income every month and you feel like you owe a lot to them, that's when it's easy to slide into that kind of dynamic with a client. And I've been there. Like I've definitely been in that position before, and it's tough to get out of it once you're in it. And so I think it's important to be mindful of those things going into those types of working relationships.
For sure. And I think that the next obvious thing to talk about with retainers is the money. Because invariably, that's what comes up. Like when we're talking to other freelancers about this, it's like, okay, retainers sound like a good idea. Cool. What do I charge? How right. do I charge? How does the money thing work? And I think that like a lot of things, it depends. Like a buddy of mine who's a freelancer and is in the course, so he's watched all our material and stuff like that. He's like, that's all well and good to like charge by deliverable and to move away from hourly pricing. But he's like, well, a client that I've worked with forever understands hourly pricing, is good with hourly pricing, is good when I raise my rates in hourly pricing. So he's like, I think it's going to be very tricky to move away from hourly pricing. And I'm just like, don't. Mm-hmm. If something's working and if something's beneficial to you and to the client, even though we both said on many times, hourly pricing is something to try to move away from, it's not always the case. Like, I think that any rule that's so general that it should always be applied is a bit too vague to be useful. Just kind of philosophical.
It is. Very meta.
But I also think that it has to be what works for you and for the client. And I think this is where a lot of freelancers struggle with figuring out like, okay, well, if Paul and Kaylee said not to charge hourly, like what do I charge and how do I structure it? And I think it can get difficult when the scope of work is very undefined. Mm-hmm. When I was doing a retainer, I was doing X number of websites that had X scope every month. So I'd get paid the same amount. So the hourly rate doesn't matter. Or if it's like, oh, you're getting hired to write like 4 articles a month for a blog post, and they're all should be about 800 words, then hourly doesn't even come into the equation because what the client needs is that deliverable. Whereas if you're just supposed to be kind of like on standby for a certain amount of time, then it definitely gets harder to figure out how the work should work unless it's hourly. But I do think there are ways to kind of figure it out. And I kind of think it's a case-by-case basis, to be honest.
I do too. And I think you really have to approach the pricing question looking at it from the perspective of what value is the client getting out of this and how do I need to factor that into my pricing. And so that's kind of the same thing that you do when you're pricing any project. You think about not the deliverable, like you said, or not the hours of time that it's going to take you to complete said project. It's more about like what problems are you solving for them, or what expertise can you bring to the table? And the fact that you're basically, they have time on your schedule or they have a certain level of priority over certain projects or maybe a more direct line of communication with you, however you decide to structure that, I think that all of those things factor into that value conversation. And so when you sit down to come up with a quote or to discuss this with the client, those are all things that need to be brought out in the open so that it's not just a matter of, oh, I can do this and I can work with your budget, but here's the value that you're going to get out of this working relationship. And basically, like, having this be a long-term engagement where you have access to me and access to my time, and how that's going to make your life easier, basically. Freelancing is hard enough, so why not let someone else take care of hosting for your clients?
That's why Flywheel created a simple platform that makes it a breeze to build WordPress sites, collaborate with clients, and seamlessly offload the finished product, all from the same place. Trust us. With a WordPress solution this smooth, you'll have tons of time to book new freelance business.
So why do we think Flywheel is the best WordPress hosting for clients?
Well, those free demo sites are pretty awesome. That way you don't have to pay until you go live.
They also have easy to transfer billing to a client once you finish up the project, or you can get them to pay right from the start while you set things up.
So never worry about a client calling you at 2 a.m. because their site is down. Flywheel has servers around the world and tech on standby 24/7. They even back your websites up nightly and will clean up your WordPress site if it gets hacked.
Check out getflywheel.com/friends/CC and use the code CCPODCAST to snag 50% off your first month of any plan.
Yeah, and I mean, not to bring up, it's taken a long time in this episode to get here, but I think it's time to pull out the freelancer bingo cards because I'm going to mention boundaries.
Yes.
So I think it's important with any project, but I think especially, very, very especially with retainers, that regardless of how you price it, regardless of the way you structure it, you have to be clear going into it what the boundaries are. Like them paying you, whatever they're paying you a month, doesn't mean that they should have like 24/7 access to your cell phone number, mm-hmm. I would assume.
Right.
In my mind, I'm thinking like, how much would I feel comfortable charging somebody to have 24/7 access to my cell phone?
$1 million.
Exactly. It's like, it would have to be something that ludicrous for me to agree to it. And I think we need to make sure that clients understand, like, yes, they're paying you an hourly rate, and yes, they're going to be getting something in return. And yes, they're probably going to have, like, they're guaranteed some space or some time on your calendar, but it doesn't mean that you're at their beck and call for absolutely everything, unless you're charging them $1 million a month or more, in which case,
right. Good for you.
Good for you. You probably don't need to listen to this show.
Right. What are you doing here?
Exactly. So I think that that's really important to kind of structure the way things work and to kind of figure out like, okay, this is what you're going to get. And I also think that kind of lends itself to the idea that maybe it's worth doing a trial run with retainer clients. And it's in their best interest too, right? Like it's like, let's do this for say 2 months mm-hmm. and see like, are you getting value for what you're paying me for this thing? Am I able to do the things and still make money in my business? Because if my business is profitable, it can stay open and it can continue to serve you. And just to kind of get a feel for like how this relationship works. And I think doing that on like a bit of a trial basis and then adjusting if need be, if not, whatever, makes kind of sense to me at least.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because when you think about retainers, you usually think about a long-term agreement. So 6 to 12 months minimum most of the time. And so I don't think it's even a good idea to bring up the conversation of a retainer until you've worked with a client for at least a month, because you don't want to get locked into a long-term agreement with somebody that's not a good fit or who is clearly taking advantage of your time or, you know, has a lot of rules around how they want you to work or when is, you know, already treating you like an employee. That's definitely not somebody you want to get into a long-term agreement with. So I think it's always good to have that trial run period before anything is signed and before that conversation even happens. Because like I said, you don't want to get locked into a client from hell or, you know, a year, you know, you have 11 more months to spend with this person who's absolutely driving you insane.
Exactly. I think as well that I would never take on a retainer client unless I did a project with them first. I would never do any retainer work. Because the work that I did was like, I'm designing a website. It's going to take like 2 to 3 months. We're going to be working together quite a bit. It was only those clients that I offered retainer work to. And a lot of the retainer work was pretty good to get into at that point. Because I knew, and like I wouldn't offer retainer projects to clients I didn't like working with. Mm-hmm. So that was always pretty telling, at least for me, hopefully not to them. But the other thing is, how do you figure out what to offer as a retainer? And I think that For me, it was always other things that the client needed that maybe I didn't provide, but I could have provided based on the skill set I had. Like I could easily help add and format blog posts for clients because I had set up their website. Or I could easily offer to like set up templates in MailChimp or like help them schedule and segment automations because email marketing is something that I know. So I was always kind of on the lookout for things that one, that I could offer on an ongoing basis because I can't design websites for a specific client ongoing. It's like, if we're done, we're done. Like we could maybe run some A/B tests, but we're not going to be, for the type of clients I was working with, that wasn't like an ongoing thing. That was maybe like once or twice a year thing. So I was always kind of on the lookout for what I could do that could be offered ongoing because the type of work that I did was one-off.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. And for the social media stuff that I did and then still do for this one particular client, I mean, I still struggle with scope for that because social media changes a lot. And so the things that I need to do or I need to learn about or I need to execute change a lot. And so that means just I have to be very open and candid in my conversations with the client about, okay, well, if you want me to do X, I'm going to need to scale back Y so that we're still within our agreed to scope. Or sometimes if there's like a above and beyond project, sometimes it's good to have like an hourly rate for those types of overages that can just be tacked on. Or, you know, sometimes that's something that you have rollover time from a month before. If maybe you had a slower month than usual and they didn't need you as much. I think it's good to have a lot of detail around those types of things in the project scope so that when those anomalies do pop up, you have an action plan for here's how I'm going to address this, or here's how I'm going to keep my finger on the scope of this project. Because the second that you don't, and the second you throw something in for free, or you do the little extra, or you're like, oh yeah, no problem, I can take care of that for you. It's like, give the mouse a cookie, you know? They just start asking for more. And so you have to be very, very rigid in your process and in your boundaries so that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, as somebody who's had a lot of rodents, I know that if I would give them a cookie, they would come back 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
Where's my extra cookie?
That's right.
They're funny like that. We used to call them treat-seeking missiles because it's basically what they are. I don't know about rollover time. I think the only time that I would say that rollover time would make sense is if, say, you're going on vacation and you agree to do like a bit of work before and a bit of work after, or if you agree ahead of time that, hey, look, we don't need you for this month, but can we move that month to like the 13th month instead?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, like my cell phone provider doesn't let me roll over minutes.
That's
like
true.
I think that rolling over minutes might be the opposite of a retainer, I think. A retainer is not that they guaranteed have the work for you. It's that if they do, and should they, because they most likely will, that you're available to do it and they don't have to go to kind of the back of the schedule. So if they're a little bit under on a month, I probably would just be like, this is the retainer.
Right.
And just like if they were slightly over on a month, I may not bring it up if it happened maybe once or twice, just because I'm like, okay, it was a bit under that month. It'll be a bit over. I'll use my discretion kind of thing. But I think you brought up a really good point of, and this also relates to cell phone providers. The point that you made that I really liked was that it's okay if sometimes things are extra. Like even if you're in a retainer client, they might have just more work than usual. And then if you talk to them about it, like, hey, this is actually quite substantially more than the scope we set in the retainer, which is totally fine, but this is how much I'm going to need to charge for the work. Or we can roll it into the next month. We'll do that work next month, not roll over minutes, but roll over doing the actual project to the mm-hmm. next month when you might have a bit less time. Because it's like my cell phone provider as well. If I need my phone for more time, for more data, for more long distance calls, then they're going to charge me, even though I have a contract with them and I pay $50 a month every month. If I go over the time that I need or the data that I need, then they're going to charge me. And I know ahead of time that, hey, it's going to cost more if I need more.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that a lot of the time when these things come up, especially for early in the game freelancers or people who are just getting started, it's very much a confidence issue. So they don't want to push back because they're scared that they'll lose the retainer, and they really like having that recurring revenue month after month. It adds a lot of stability to their career and into their business, and it's a lot of peace of mind. And so there's all this fear associated with, pushback and with, oh my God, what if they fire me? Or what if they decide that I'm being a pain in the ass and they don't want to work with me anymore? And I think that in my experience, most of the time when you push back and you hold your ground and you use something like creative class contract, which has that stipulation built in, if the project goes beyond our agreed upon scope, there is an hourly rate of X amount, which I love. That's what I use with all of my clients. When you do push back and you do say, you know, call them out a little bit on it, there's more respect there in the client and freelancer relationship than if you just let yourself get walked all over, because then they know that they can. And like I said, it shifts the power dynamic a little bit. And so you have to be confident enough to know what's right and know what you agreed to and stick to it. And really, if the client is trying to take advantage a little bit, then push back and say, hey, I'm a business owner. This is how it's got to be. It's not personal. It's very much business. And get over the hump of the confidence issue.
Yeah. And I think this rolls right back around to the very beginning where you're still a freelancer. You're still getting paid for your expertise and you're getting paid to make the decisions for how you work and not letting the client tell you this is how you work like they would with an employee, or like these are the hours you work. This is the software you use. This is the communication style. So I think even though doing retainers feels like a little step towards employment, it isn't. Like it might seem like we're edging towards that, but we're not. Like you said, as long as we keep our boundaries intact and keep our foot down as far as things go, it makes sense. And again, that kind of speaks to the other point that I made at the beginning, where if you're really relying on one retainer to bring in the bulk of your revenue, then you may get, and the reason that's a bad thing is because it may force you to let go of your boundaries, or may force you into more uncomfortable situations where the client is demanding certain things or certain amounts of time from you or certain other things where it's like, oh, if I let this client go, they're my biggest client. Like they bring in the bulk of my revenue. So, I mean, just like with investments, like it's good to have a diverse portfolio. With income sources from different clients, I think it's also good to have a diverse portfolio. So then if one retainer client goes away, then it's like, it sucks because not having money next month is never a good thing, but it's not like the end. It's not like, oh my goodness, I've got to scramble hard to fill that huge gap.
Right. Yeah, I think that's so true. And again, like if your client list is small in the beginning and you're just starting out freelancing, it's scary. It's hard to say no to stuff. It's hard to push back and feel uncomfortable about that stuff. I mean, especially if you're someone like me who hates conflict or hates confrontation, that can feel really, really intimidating. But you have to do it. You have to do it. If you want to make retainers work and you don't want to be treated like an employee, that's part of the deal. And I think that that's the biggest thing that people don't think about going into them. So I'm glad we talked about this.
Me too. This was a good conversation. I'm glad this is the last one. This is the, it feels like this is a good way to kind of sum. I'm not glad that it's the last one because we're done here. I'm glad that it's the last one because I feel like this really summed up a lot of the things that we talked about this season.
Yeah. Hashtag boundaries.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast.
If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review there.
And be sure to check out our course, The Creative Class.
You can find it at creativeclass.co.
Yes.